Vintage Radio Network in a few moments. Stick with us. You are about to hear a live broadcast on the Heritage Radio Network in a few moments. Stick with us.
I'm Sam Edwards. I'm third generation Cure Master from S. Wallace Edwards & Sons in Surrey, Virginia. We support the Heritage Radio Network because we believe in the cause and what they're doing. They're supporting family-raised livestock, small family farms, certified humane, pasture-raised, antibiotic-free. Basically, we take the products from Heritage Foods USA and make them into Serrano-style hams, prosciutto-style hams, bacon, sausage, like my grandfather did. You can find us at Surrey Farms. .com or virginiatraditions.com.
Welcome to Why We Cook, the Chef Smarty Pants radio show on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, your host. Did you ever see that movie, The Days of Wine and Roses? We had to watch it when I was in health class in seventh grade as a precautionary tale as to what would happen to you if you overdid it. It was about an alcoholic, and I can't even remember what really happened. It had something to do with this, obviously, alcoholism, some guy drinking too much, winding up hitting rock bottom, finding AA, blah, blah, blah. It was basically about a weekend-long bender, like The Lost Weekend, which may be the film I'm thinking we saw. I think I may be, I don't know, confusing them. But that's how I sort of feel about this last weekend, that it was a lost weekend. It was a bender, but it wasn't a bender of drinking. It was a bender of meat eating. Now, once upon a time, I was a vegetarian. Yes, way back in college days, I read a book called Diet for a New America by this guy, John Robbins. John Robbins was the heir to the Baskin-Robbins fortune, but after doing his own personal investigation of the meat, dairy, and egg industry, he decided that he couldn't accept the hundreds of millions of dollars he was set to inherit because it came from the dairy industry, basically, and he was very opposed to that. And so instead, he became this evangelist for vegan eating, I guess vegetarian and vegan eating. And he wrote this book in the 80s, mid-80s, that was like an expose on the egg and dairy and meat industry. And so I read that book in college, and it had a very powerful effect on me. And it was very graphic and made me pretty sick, and I decided that I should be a vegetarian, which I think a lot of people do when they're in college. It seems to be when you do that. And this was like years before anybody was talking about things like good meat, like ethical raising of pastured, grass-fed meat. Nobody was talking about that yet. And so there was sort of no choice. It was like you either eat, you know, the industrial meat or you don't eat any animal products at all. And he was basically advocating that, like eating no animal products whatsoever. And I couldn't do that. I mean, I could give up the meat, but I could not give up the dairy and the eggs because I love them so much. And back then, you couldn't even find organic, or I wouldn't have known how to find organic stuff. I couldn't afford it at the time. But I did give up red meat and most birds for a pretty long time. Probably not until I got out of college and a few years later started cooking professionally that I started eating them again. But back then I was a very, very poor art student. And so I ate what most poor, semi-attempting vegetarians eat, which is pasta. A lot of pasta. And I got really, really fat. I mostly existed on carbs. And part of that was because it was the fat phobic years of the 80s and the 90s when all the prevailing predominant nutritionist people out there were saying fat is bad and you should just eat lots of carbs. And so that's what I did. And I got really fat and I got really unhealthy to the point where it was starting to like mess with my blood sugar. Like I was on this cycle of, you know, I would eat carbs. And then I would crash because my blood sugar would crash from all those white carbs, you know, and then I would crave sugar and then I would eat crap like cake. And it was just this really bad cycle. And I was probably at the point where I was pre-diabetic, but it was never diagnosed because not only was I really poor, but I had no health insurance for about 5 years. So I never went to the doctor. And I was sitting around an office job and, you know, it wasn't helping. So I decided to change careers because I hated the office job. And once I started working in restaurants, I realized I had to pretty quickly start eating meat again so I would know what it tasted like, so I would know how to cook it properly. And that's when I started eating animals again. And I started getting back into shape like I was before college in my pre-vegetarian years when I was still fairly fit. And I realized that I needed protein. It just came down to that. We're humans, we're animals, we need protein. So John Robbins be damned, I started eating. Yet I started with poultry and I started eating poultry again. And then I went to work in Maine in a hotel and we had this amazing lamb dish on the menu and I got totally hooked on lamb from that. I had never given up on fish and shellfish completely though, because I could have never given up sushi. So I was never a true vegetarian. I did eat fish. So I was still eating that. But then the final frontier for me really was beef. I had really avoided eating beef like forever, for a really, really long time. And then I went to Vietnam for the first time. And I ate Vietnamese grilled beef over rice noodles. Because when you're in a country like that, you can't be picky. You can't say, oh, I eat this and not this, because that's ridiculous. And that's when I knew I had crossed back over into the light. I had left the dark side and crossed back over. And I like meat. You know, I'm human. We're carnivores. Well, we're omnivores. And I like it. But I can't eat a lot of it. That's the thing. It's like I started eating it again. And I'm not a steak person. I never say, oh, let's go out and eat a big fat steak. I can't do that. What I like is like a few thin slices of like perfect medium rare lamb or beef or, you know, something. Over like a pile of greens. Like that's my perfect meal. That's my perfect meaty meal. I don't want the 12-ounce strip or the prime rib. I find that actually a little bit repulsive, a little bit sickening to eat like a big slab in that kind of like Flintstone-y way of eating. I don't want that. And, you know, of course, you know me. You've listened to this show. You know who I am. I understand the environmental and the ethical and the health issues that go along with the overconsumption of protein that we do as Westerners on this planet. And I know that collectively we eat too much meat, and I know that it's killing us and it's killing our planet. I know all that. But like I said, we are omnivores. We have these little pointy teeth on the sides of our mouth for a reason, for basically ripping flesh of other animals. We don't have to give it up completely, but I think if we all just cut back a little bit, we'd be a lot better off. Like, not give it up completely. I'm not saying it because I don't want to give it up completely. But maybe if we all scaled back our meat eating like 50%, we'd do a lot less harm to ourselves, to our home. And, you know, like I said, I'd rather have a few thin slices of perfectly pink, juicy lamb over a big pile of dandelion greens than, you know, the full rack of lamb chops any day. It's just me. It's just how I like to eat. Too much meat kind of, it makes me feel a little bit sick, and it makes me feel like I need a really long nap, which is kind of how I'm feeling today coming off my meaty bender of the weekend. So we're going to take a really quick break. When we come back, I'll explain more about what happened in the lost weekend of meat.
Back to you.
You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by Edwards. Edwards what, Jack? Sorry.
S. Wallace Edwards and Sons.
Oh, there you go. Sorry, I don't have it in front of me. S. Wallace Edwards and Sons. They make Siriano ham, which is really freaking delicious, I must say. Domestic prosciutto, basically. Really good. Speaking of meat. Anyway, welcome back to Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, your host. There's a very, very cute little baby sitting right out there in the dining area in front of me, grabbing a salad and pulling it apart. It's very cute. Anyway, so I was talking about my my lost weekend, my bender of protein that I'm just coming off of, and I feel like I'm sort of emerging from a coma. So the end of last week and the past weekend were, I think, probably the meatiest days of my life. Here's how it all began. On Thursday, I was teaching, you know, I teach in a culinary school, and I had two back-to-back practical exams that I had to administer and then taste. Both of them were chicken, so I started off with the chicken day. And, you know, chicken's meat, meat's meat. The first one was a class where they had to sauté a chicken breast, French sauté, make a pan sauce, which is a stock-based sauce, some kind of potato preparation, and an assigned veg. And then the second one, the same afternoon, involved utilizing the whole chicken. So they had to use the chicken leg and breast and thigh, make a sauce. And then they had randomly assigned starches and randomly assigned vegetables on the plate. So, like I said, at least these were chicken. It was a light start to the 3 days. But I still ultimately had to taste 27 different plates between the two classes. 27. I had 16 people in the afternoon and 11 in the morning. That makes 27. Yeah, 27. So think about that. You have to sit there and taste 27 different entrees and grade them objectively and not throw up, which is hard. That was Thursday, and several of them were raw, which are immediately disqualified. I don't taste those if they're raw. So maybe it was less than 27. Anyway, that was Thursday. So that was like from 8 in the morning till 5 in the afternoon Thursday. Then on Friday, my pal Beege came up from Baltimore for the weekend. You've heard about Beege on this show before. Beege is my buddy Beege from Baltimore, who is my partner in the Chef's Garden Food and Wine Festival, which is coming up in a few weeks in July. We always do a station together. This year, we wanted to kind of work out our dish before we headed out there, so we decided he'd come up and, you know, we'd get some prep space and we'd order some food and we would make sure we had the dish really down pat before we went out there. So he came, met me after work on Friday, and we went to this place. I think it's called 208 Burger or 208 Burger. Anyway, it's in Borum Hill, near where I live on Atlantic and Smith. It was just a coincidence that we went for burgers. I didn't anticipate it to be the beginning of this meat gorge, but it was. Anyway, this place has probably the best burgers I've ever eaten. And I rarely eat burgers. I went for years and years without eating a burger. And then I've started again in the last couple of years. And I'll have one maybe once a month, once every 2 months. These are unbelievably good. I mean, they're completely like corn-fed, fatty, you know, industrial meat burgers. Totally the opposite of, you know, what I preach about. But they are really damn delicious nonetheless. So this place, all they serve is burgers. They have a Greek salad on the menu and burgers and a few local microbrews, and that's it. It's like the perfect little restaurant. It's cheap. It's really good. The two of us ate there. We each had a beer. We shared a salad. We each had a burger. And it was $22 each. Ridiculous. But eating there made me feel kind of guilty and kind of a hypocrite, because I do always talk about how you should only eat high quality, grass fed, pastured, blah, 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 locavore. And then, you know, we said, oh, where do you guys get your meat from? And they said, oh, Los Paisanos, which is like the butcher on Smith Street in the neighborhood. It wasn't exactly what we meant with the question, so we just left it at that. But anyways, since we felt sort of guilty about eating this way, we decided that we should continue to numb ourselves with alcohol. Like I said, it was a lost weekend. And so we went to this other place in the neighborhood called Char Number 4, which is like a restaurant that specializes in bourbon and whiskey and scotch, but mostly bourbon. So we went there, we had bourbon cocktails, and we ordered a plate of fried pork chunks, basically fried pork nuggets and lamb pastrami after the burgers. And after we had tested our dish, which I'll get to in a minute, and after the 27 chicken plates the day before. So that was a little rough. Sleeping that night, not so good. Woke up the next morning, not feeling so good. Beach was not feeling so good. But, you know, we muddled through. So then that was Friday night. So then Saturday we got to work on our dish. Now, I can't say what the meat was on the dish because there I may have competitors out there listening. So, you know, we go out to Chef's Garden in Ohio every year and we do this event. It's a fundraiser for their program called Veggie U, which is a great program. And, you know, look it up, Veggie U, letter U, .org. And it's a food and wine festival fundraiser. Great. But it's also a competition. And the competition is to win a trip to formerly El Bulli in Spain. For a few years, the trip was you would win a trip to El Bulli, like all expenses paid. But now El Bulli is closing. So last year, it was to win a trip to the French Laundry. This year, it's to win a trip to Alinea in Chicago. So 2 years ago, I came in third in the El Bulli year. Last year, Beej and I did it together. We came in fourth in the French Laundry year. So this is it. Like, this is our year. And we want to be so sure that we win. So we tested our dish, but I can't say what it was. Okay, it was a meat. It's a sort of red meat. That's all I'm going to say because I know some of you chefs out there who are going are listening, and you better not steal my idea, bitches, okay? So we tested the meat out like four ways, and we had to four different cooking ways, four different rubs, like all these ways, and we had to taste each variation each time with different condiments and different sides and all of that. So there was a whole lot of meat eating going on there, too, that day. Now, the whole point of this event is to highlight, other than raising money, is to highlight the Chef's Garden's produce. So we had to incorporate a lot of produce into this dish, too. That's really the most important thing. So we did eat a lot of vegetables in the testing process, which helped to kind of get all the meat down, you know, keep it that way. So we finished it up. We perfected the dish. It's great. Maybe we'll win. I hope so. It would have been a lot more fun to go to Spain than go to Chicago. But Chicago's good, too. I'd go to Chicago. That's okay. So then it was time for dinner on Saturday. Okay, that was Saturday afternoon. Now it's time for dinner on Saturday. Now, Beej was in town. I wanted to go somewhere really good. I wanted him to get the kind of, like, New York locavore, you know, cool place experience. And Beej's buddy Nathan was in town, too, because that weekend was the Big Apple Barbecue. Now, the Big Apple Barbecue is this meat-gorging event at Madison Square Park. It's a fundraiser for the park. It's run by the guys who run the whole Union Square Group. If you don't know about this and you like barbecue, you need to come to it because it's all the top pitmasters in the country bring their rigs into New York. They set up around Madison Square Park. You pay, like, however much per tasting. It's like $8, and you walk around and you stuff yourself silly with barbecue. It's kind of insane. Anyway, Nathan works in marketing for the meat company that supplies Shake Shack and a bunch of other restaurants. They produce an all-natural beef. And so he was in town because they had supplied all the brisket for the barbecue event. And so Nathan wanted to come along for dinner. He's friends with Beach from Baltimore, so he wanted to join us for dinner. So we decided we'd go to Buttermilk Channel out in Carroll Gardens in Brooklyn because I thought that would be like kind of a good, like, you know, New York, Brooklyn, locavore kind of place. And also, the beef that Nathan sells, they sell there. And on Saturday nights, they feature a 20-ounce Delmonico from his company. So we decided to go there. Now, I didn't order that because I don't really eat steak. But I did have a lamb and poached egg salad, which was basically like 10 big lettuce leaves with about a pound of roasted lamb on top and a big gooey poached egg. It was a salad, basically, but a salad that was made out of lamb. Big chunks of roasted lamb. Delicious. Now, someone at the table did order the big steak, and somebody ordered a duck meatloaf. So we all tasted. We had an all-around meaty good time, drank a lot of beer. Then we went and we ate ice cream to top it off, which is also something I never eat. So that was Saturday. Went home feeling a little stuffed, not so good. And then came Sunday. So we're going to take another very short break, and then we'll talk about what happened on Sunday. We'll be right back.
Following is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Tune in to Hot Grease every Monday at 3:30 p.m. Hot Grease strives to bring sustainability, localized sourcing, and other forward-thinking schools of culinary thought to the minds and kitchens of everyday folk. Each week, Nicole Taylor's conversations cover the entire spectrum of food enthusiasts, from internationally renowned culinary masters to moms on a budget looking to impress their tiniest critics. Again, that's every Monday at 3:30 p.m., Hot Grease on the Heritage Radio Network.
Welcome back to Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wise, your host. Remember that if you like this show, you can find us on Facebook at Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. Become a fan, send a comment, anything you want to say, let me know. You can also follow me on Twitter at Chef Smarty Pants, and you can always listen to any of our shows on iTunes, and you can also listen to them on the Heritage Radio Network site. You have many, many options. No excuses. All right, so we're talking about the meat, the overconsumption this past weekend, and we're at Sunday. Remember, it started Thursday with the chicken, the practical exam, the 27 different chicken dishes, and it ended on Sunday. So Sunday, Nathan hooked us up and took us to the Big Apple Barbecue because he was one of the sponsors, his company. We had VIP passes. Oh, my God. So the way it works is you can either walk around with your regular tickets and pay a la carte, or you can get what they call this fast pass thing, which is preloaded with money, and then they just punch out little, like, amount dots off of your card. So we had these VIP passes plus $100 vouchers for the barbecue event. That's a lot of meat. That's a lot of food. So basically we spent like 3 hours just kind of slowly wandering around. Like, our pace was really slow. It was like we were already in kind of a coma. Stopping every few minutes at a different truck to eat ribs or pulled pork sandwiches or brisket and sausage or more ribs. And then because we were with him, we could get into the VIP area. And in the VIP area, they had free beer and free bourbon and free cocktails. And then luckily also free salad and coleslaw and fruit, which, you know, stupid me, I was all excited about that. It was really sickening. I've probably used that word a lot tonight, but it was a little bit much. We walked around. We pretty much ate one of everything. More meat than I have eaten in one day. I think probably in all of my 40-something years that I've been eating solid food. It was really, it was an extreme experience for me. So then it was finished. Beach headed off on the train to Baltimore. Nathan had to go back to his room, and we decided to head home. And we decided we would walk home to Brooklyn and try to, like, kind of work some of it through, because I couldn't sit down after that. So we took a nice, long, slow walk back to Brooklyn, basically collapsed on the couch and watched 6 episodes of Weeds in a row, because I'm always a little behind the times, and I've just discovered Weeds. I know. Well, I don't really have cable, so through the magic of Netflix now. So then we went on a Weeds bender, just not nearly as good as a meat bender. Now, as I was saying earlier in the show, I don't normally really eat a lot of meat. I like little bits, little tastings, a few thin slices of something here and there. And despite that 72-hour meat binge that I just described to you, I really, you know, I just, that's like way more than I've ever had. And I really don't often, if ever, eat traditional barbecue. I mean, I like it, I guess. I never say, hey, let's go to, you know, wherever, Blue Smoke or whatever those places are called, and eat a big pile of Southern-style barbecue. I mean, I would say, hey, let's go eat a big pile of Korean barbecue or Vietnamese barbecue. But those really, that's not barbecue. Those are just grilling. They just are really, really good at grilling really thin pieces of meat, which is what I really like. That's not barbecuing, people. We know this. We know what true barbecue is. It involves smoke and a pit and rubs and marinades and a really, really, really long time. It's like a long combination of smoke and time makes barbecue. Now, I really appreciate the craft that people put into it and the devotion that barbecue fanatics have to maintaining and preserving barbecue culture. I think it's amazing. I mean, I think it's one of our true kind of American foods. And I really respect their attention to detail, and I like the results. I can't eat that much of it, but, you know, I'm very small, so that's what happens with me. But I still really think that after all of that, we'd all be better off eating a lot less meat and a lot better quality meat. I love the concept of barbecue. I just don't think there should be as much of it consumed as we do. Nathan told me that his company donated 18,000 pounds of brisket for this two-day event, and there were only two vendors selling brisket that I could see. The rest was all pork. And the rest of it was pork that had been donated, too, by Smithfield. Now, Smithfield is like the most industrial, polluting, factory-farmed of them all. Smithfield's had a lot of bad press lately. Not the first company I would choose if I were going to be buying pork. I mean, it was very nice of them to donate it for a good cause. But the sheer volume of meat just kind of sickened me, the sheer amount of it. You know, we have figured out how to produce meat really, really cheaply in this country. And some people think that's great, but I don't think that's great. And I think most of you don't think that's great. You understand why it's not great. Our meat's too cheap. We eat too much of it. The quality of it is very poor, and I'm not even going to get into how the animals are treated, of course. So imagine if there were an event like this, a barbecue event like this, that celebrated American-style barbecue and all its glory, and yet only, like, heritage breeds of pork were used. Now, the tickets would be a lot more money. You'd probably have to pay several hundred dollars, but maybe the portions could be a lot smaller. Since that meat tastes so much better, maybe they could serve portions that were like a quarter of the size of what they were serving. At an event like this, people are walking around to 15, 20 vendors. They don't need to eat full-size portions at each one, right? I don't think so. The portions could be a lot smaller, but think about the bump it would give to the producers of quality, sustainably raised, healthy animals. Think about how much meat they could move and how much they could sell. So, you know, I'm wondering if the barbecue lovers of the region who attended this event would be willing to pay more, eat less, and know that they were doing the right thing? Or do people just want to pig out, so to speak, and not really think about their actions? I mean, I know I'd have been happier if the portions were 25% of the size, because then I could have tried a lot more stuff and felt a lot less sick. I don't really know. I mean, maybe the tide is turning. People certainly want value in their, you know, they want that supersize. But this is New York. I think we're a pretty sophisticated crowd. Maybe we'd be willing to pay a little bit more, eat a little bit less, knowing we're getting something a lot, lot better. I don't know. But anyway, that's the tale of my meat madness lost weekend, my days of pork and IPA. And I think now I understand what a bender feels like. I've never had one. I was saying to the guys here in the booth that for me, a bender would be if I had three beers instead of two. So then yesterday I had the day off and went grocery shopping, and I can tell you that in my grocery cart there was a lot of things like cabbage and beans and canned wild salmon and not too much meat. Actually, there was none at all. It's like beans, gazpacho, and slaw in my house for the next few days. We're going to be detoxing from that. So we are out of time. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Jack in the control room, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
This is Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer. This story comes off of MarketWire. Totally Green enters the U.S. hotel market with Orca, O-R-C-A, Green Machine, installed at the Four Seasons Hotel in Boston, Massachusetts. Totally Green Incorporated, a pioneer in organic food processing systems and compostable packaging alternatives, has installed its revolutionary Orca Green Machine at the Four Seasons Hotel in Boston. Four Seasons Hotels have implemented the Orca Green Machine to establish on-site composting of organic food waste generated by its restaurant and cuisine services. The organic composter saves the hotel tipping or disposal costs. The organic refuse produced by the hotel no longer needs to be hauled away. The Orca Green Machine composts up to 2,400 pounds of organic refuse per day into harmless, nutrient-rich gray water that can be safely put into the sanitary sewer system. The Four Seasons Hotel staff deposits any organic food waste generated throughout the hotel's guest rooms and restaurants into the composting machine. This aerobic compost process complements Four Seasons' environmental mission to support sustainability by reducing the amount of methane-producing organic material that they send to landfills. Well, kudos to the Four Seasons Hotel chain, because everybody could do that if they wanted to spend the money. I thought that was a really interesting story. This has been Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer.
HeritageRadioNetwork.com has its own architecture show dedicated to the built environment, hosted by Curtis B. Wayne. Check out a small clip of Burning Down the House.
So if we look at tall buildings and we talk about the wind blowing over them, we have all these different variants on, is it a horizontal rotor, like the big wind turbines that you see off of Aarhus in Denmark, I think it's where it is, and the local people are very proud of it. Or Falmouth, where the locals are not happy at all. Out west, there are enormous wind farms, but they're far from habitations. And so the low-frequency sound that's generated by those turbines is not a problem. But what we don't want in terms of taking this notion, this notion of the future, and making it beautiful and bright and clean and silent, is to create.
Want to hear more? Well, tune in live to Burning Down the House every Sunday at 4:30 p.m. or check out past episodes in our archive or subscribe to the podcast in iTunes. Thanks for listening. The following is a message from HeritageFoodsUSA.com. The difference between wild Alaskan salmon and farmed Atlantic salmon is just as great as the differences between commodity pork and heritage breed pork. Huge! HeritageFoodsUSA.com is lining up a major social buy of sustainably harvested salmon in July and offering it at a phenomenal price to consumers. Check out HeritageFoodsUSA.com for more details on how to get in on this opportunity. Experience salmon the way it should be. The following is a public service announcement from Just Food.
Help bring live chickens into food challenge communities through your donations to the Just Food City Chicken Project 2011. The City Chicken Project would not be possible without the volunteer hours, donations large and small, and the vibrant energy and ideas of the communities we work with. Just Food is a nonprofit organization that connects New York City communities and local and urban farmers with the resources and support they need to make fresh, locally grown food accessible to all. To donate, search on Kickstarter.com for Just Food and find their City Chicken Project. For more information on Just Food, visit justfood.org or call 212-645-9880. That's 212-645-9880. Let's keep making New York City a better place to live and eat.